Where my seeds up, niggas? My beads up, niggas? Let's all get together, shoot the deeds up, niggas. I shot a detective, he tried to search me, I ain't getting arrested. I'm in a house full of bloods, but I'm fucking with Lopes. I gotta stab a nigga up before I get poked. That's what my man who locked up told me when he wrote me. Sometimes I wish I could be there with my homie. What you know about your man that you knew for 20 years? He locked up, the judge wanna give him 20 years. You see, that's why I hate the cops. So I be happy when detectives get shot. Where the hood at? Throw a party on the block. We gon' celebrate for all the cops that got shot and wish death to many more. What the fuck you think?
Okay, so we're joined here today with three people that have come all the way out to the Bay Area for the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee conference. So we have one person that's formerly incarcerated and two people that came all the way out from Minneapolis, and this gentleman is from Oklahoma. So we're going to be talking to each of them and some other people that are at the conference. So I'm just curious, why did you all come out here? What's so important with supporting prisoners that are going to be going on strike on the 9th?
So we are members of the Industrial Workers of the World Union. We have our annual convention at this time. And years ago when IWOC, which is the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, formed, we decided that we need our own kind of conference to coordinate our national strategy. As prison abolitionists, our national strategy in IWOC is to facilitate prisoners that are already self-organizing and to try an industrial union model with their organizing methods. Years ago, members of Free Alabama Movement contacted the IWW union and realized that, you know, we need to try to collectivize our efforts and potentially unionize, and that a way of targeting and breaking apart the prison industrial complex can be through methods of work strikes and labor stoppages. So that's what brings us here today. This is my second conference. Last year it was in Minneapolis, but this year, after the conference last year and after some strikes in Texas, Free Alabama Movement, they keep pushing to do more, and they pushed for having a coordinated nationwide strike in September of this year. So that's what brings us here today, is that we are gearing up for nationwide prisoner strikes that we've been organizing for and been promoting that are going to kick off on September 9th.
Basically the same thing. I'm down here with IWOC, I'm out of Oklahoma, and I'm just down here to support the prisoners and get everybody on track nationwide, so that way we can move forward with September 9th. And I also want to point out that September 9th is the anniversary of the Attica uprising, so it's very important. It's a very important date for incarcerated and formerly incarcerated peoples. That's a time when prisoners stepped out and fought back against their oppression and slavery. So being here to help do that nationwide is very important to me.
Well, let me ask you, as a member of the IWW and also a formerly incarcerated person, like, what's it like to sit in the room with other formerly incarcerated people and actually plan this out, knowing that there are people incarcerated inside that are calling on the phone and all that stuff?
It's beautiful. I don't know how else to describe it besides that it's... whenever I was first found out about IWOC, I was worried that there wasn't enough former prisoners on the outside working with them. And then when I found out there were other former prisoners working with them, and not just political prisoners, but prisoners that have gone down for all kinds of things. So it's beautiful. It's truly inspiring. It really keeps my head in the game, as far as, like, I know that I got my fellow brother and sister prisoners with me, inside and out. So it's very inspiring.
So let me put a question to you. So we were talking about, before we started, about the connection between Standing Rock and the September 9th strike. You've been out there. What are your thoughts on both of these things happening and kind of escalating at the same time?
Well, just to quickly just introduce myself before I get into that. This is my first IWOC conference. I joined the union in about March, I got involved with folks involved with the union and the General Defense Committee in Minneapolis through the struggles in Minneapolis over police terrorism, over the killing of Jamar Clark. And I saw a lot of folks from the union out there, a lot of other black people who were in the union out there, and I just met with people really quickly and realized this was one of the best organizations in my area to be a part of to further the fight against, to abolish capitalism and also black liberation. And I'm out here because, as I'm sure most folks listening in are aware of, mass incarceration is the new form of enslavement towards black people. New form of that's not new, but it's a form of social control that I'd say is very a big focus towards us being used, and in general against working people of all overall races. So the ties between police terrorism and the prison industrial complex. I mean, to me, they're intertwined. There's no separation. So I'm someone who's been very involved in fighting against police terrorism before like Black Lives Matter and all that took off. So this is just a natural thing I wanted to be a part of. And as to the connection between Standing Rock and this struggle, I'm someone who's also been involved in pipeline fights and been in those circles of folks really focused on that for a few years now, doing indigenous solidarity work with folks fighting a number of different issues and the pipelines. And now it's come to a head in Standing Rock with the Dakota Access Pipeline, having hundreds of thousands of people out there to stop that, understanding that is the form of, it's not only destruction of the land and water we all depend on for our survival, but it's part of the ongoing genocide against indigenous people. And so as both, you know, as black people, as a black person, I'm just involved in struggle, I've done solidarity work, I see closely how black indigenous resistance is intertwined, you know, the fight against white supremacy and capitalism, like within the United States, obviously. This is built on stolen land and genocide, and also us being used as essentially cattle and enslaved workforce to build all this bullshit. So the importance of building those ties between struggle to the fight against enslavement and, you know, for fight against the land. And finally, I want to mention, I mean, with indigenous people, people don't know this, but they have a higher rate of killings by the police and higher rates of incarceration. Mm-hmm. So mass incarceration and the police state is definitely, you know, from occupation, from exploitation of labor, a key, very, you know, that's central to be focused on as well. So there's just in general, black indigenous struggle is key to make those connections.
Well, let me put this out to all of you. What do you think is going to happen on the 9th, and what are you expecting to see? Just like in nationally, internationally, but also like where you're from.
I'll start on that. I'm in Oklahoma, and getting information into the prisoners in Oklahoma is very difficult, as well as getting information out. So in Oklahoma right now, we don't have any inside contacts. Right now, what I've been doing is working in the Southeast, Texas, Florida, and figuring out ways to support Atlanta and Alabama and Tennessee and Mississippi, and coordinating with other people in those regions. As a formerly incarcerated person, I have an idea of what it looks like when a lockdown happens. I know what an institutional shakedown looks like, and I know what a riot looks like. And basically what we want to do really is get out, build up the locals on the outside, build out the support on the outside, so that way when they do make their move on the inside, we can pressure the administration not to inflict a riot on the prisoners. If they push the prisoners, if the prisoners aren't being heard, the guards will take advantage, and prisoners could die. They could lose their lives. They could get either murdered outright or killed in a riot. So the riot gives DOC, or Departments of Corrections, or Department of Justice, or whatever the hell you want to call it, gives them the prerequisite, just like it does on the outside, to further that oppression, to put new systems in place to further hold down the prisoners. What did it look like? Prisoners go, we probably won't get information out from the prison for maybe a week, maybe days, maybe a month, because it's going to be dependent on the information that the prisoners can give us on the way out. DOC is not going to give us information. DOC can basically say, all they have to say is that the unit's on lockdown. They don't have to give any information. So we're going to be dependent on families. We're going to be dependent on jailhouse lawyers. We're going to be dependent on clergy, inside clergy, to get us the information we need so that way we can know what's going on the outside so we can continue moving forward with the work that we have to do. Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just add that this isn't the first time that prisoners are going on strike, although this might be one of the first coordinated through a few states. But this is, there's a growing movement inside prisons, and it's been building to this. I just coincidentally ran into former Black Panther Elaine Brown on the street yesterday. And she mentioned the, you know, we brought up the strike. A lot of Black Panthers are in town because there's a 50th anniversary of Panther Party events going on. But
that is so.
Yeah, I know. And she mentioned that she was talking about the Georgia prison strikes that happened in 2010 that they held for 8 days. And so, you know, and talking about the severe repression that those organizers faced, like Peter just mentioned, a lot of violence, a lot of shakedowns, lockdowns. So, yeah, we do have to have some really solid outside support and some solid inside support to figure out what's going on. Prisoners in Texas have been on strike. Prisoners in California have done strike actions. Wisconsin, like, it's been a thing. And hunger strikes is one form of applying pressure, but labor strikes is another. So we're gonna really see what inside, you know, organizers want to do and how far they're willing to take things and how long they're gonna, you know, how long they're willing to hold out. And we do need to have the solid contacts inside and the solid working relationships that we've already formed to be able to help facilitate that and to prevent, you know, a lot of the violence and a lot of the repression that they could see.
I see during and after these strikes there being a bigger spotlight in terms of the general public, an awareness of the condition, more of an awareness of the conditions that are inside prisons and of the ongoing struggles prisoners are collectively are going through the fact that people are organizing, people are doing things to resist and resist those conditions. So yeah, more of a spotlight, more of that understanding. I do foresee and or hope that there'll be more people than aware of, as far as the capacity that IWOC is involved, aware of that, and more people who will want to become involved to help strengthen our work and in general the struggle. Say even after the ninth is over, after this is over, what kind of organization us and other folks involved in this, where are we gonna be at in terms of sustaining struggle so it's not a flash in the pan sort of thing? I don't foresee that happening, but just always having that in mind, we're building towards something more. Because this is a long-term ongoing struggle, which the abolishment of prisons is the ultimate goal, and then there's a bigger piece of, well, that's gonna only be accomplished with the abolishment of capitalism. So I just see it connected to all these. Everything's what we need to build up for.
Well, let me just end on that note, just to ask one last question. There's been a lot of discussion here, like, what's the next steps? It seems like a lot of people are saying, like, after this, going back to the locals, what do you see the next step is after the strike?
after the strike, as in the strike was successful, or
after just anything.
The
initiation? After this big event, because it is going to be big.
I mean, it'll probably be more successful in some areas than others. You know?
That'll of course, you know, different regions have different levels of outside versus inside participation. In the South, we have a lot of inside participation.
Yeah.
On the outside, it's been a real struggle to get people on the outside to participate, even though we've recently had quite a bit more success. And I can only imagine after the September 9th strike that more people and more family members will come out to support. After the strike, after September 9th, post-September 9th, I foresee IWOC really reaching a movement level where we're basically right now, I mean, we're almost at an international level with prisoners showing solidarity in other countries or even going on solidarity strikes of their own. Don't ask me to name. So yeah, after the strike, you know, after they kick off the stuff, it's really hard to say what things will look like, because when I started this about 8 months ago, when I went down and got involved with the Texas strike, we had no idea what it would look like. We had no idea that even what this conference would look like at the time. So things are changing, and after September 9th, things are going to continue to change. It's really up to us to meet the challenge and continue to move forward.
Yeah, I would just echo that the strike is a national strategy that was orchestrated by the Free Alabama Movement. At the same time, we have our own local branches that are developing solid inside leaders, and we have new branches forming that are you know, connecting with folks inside, and so that work's going to continue, and it's going to cause us to grow. And it's important to keep work localized, because prisons or jails or, you know, facilities can look very different and have very different conditions inside based on where they're at. California has immigrant detention centers that see completely different conditions than, you know, a federal prison in Texas, let's say. So it's important to keep the struggles relevant to what people are agitated about the inside. So like in Minnesota, there's probably going to be a water campaign, because a lot of the prisoners are reporting that their water quality is awful, and some people are getting like H. pylori from it. So that's going to probably be a campaign that we'll kick off with our inside organizers after the strikes, and, you know, take it back to that local level, and also, you know, establishing new branches and, you know, kind of spreading awareness throughout multiple facilities and multiple prisons and multiple areas.
Just to reiterate what the newcomer here said, we're both based out of Minneapolis, returning back to, or just making sure we keep the focus on our local organizing and building that up. I'm really focused on the relationships, us as a committee in Minneapolis, and to me as an individual doing this work, wanting to build those relationships with folks in the community. People people should know who we are. People should know what's going on, what we're doing. So more of that outreach. So becoming less and less insular from people who are movement people versus like. So yeah, that's a big focus moving forward. And also, as was mentioned, in Minnesota, there very likely will be a campaign soon around water quality issues. I'm someone who's very interested in connecting different struggles. So what your last question about this connection with Standing Rock and the struggle against the pipeline, I mean, that's the big focus, is protecting water, mm-hmm. You know, protection of water. And this is a situation where, again, folks who are incarcerated are denied that basic right to clean water, and healthy water. And so, again, just bridging these connections between different struggles, so we're a stronger resistance movement in general. That's another focus of mine.
Okay, well, it looks like we got to get back. I just think it's such a really interesting question and a hard one, because something that all anarchists, you know, this point that you all are at, where it's like you were saying, it's on the verge of becoming a very large national movement. And then this question of, like, how do we actually facilitate all these new people coming in, which is really hard. And that's not an easy question to answer, but I think it's great that people are actually at that point where it's not just, like, what happens when everybody shows up, but, like, what do we do now that people are going to come in? Well, thanks for joining us. Anything else you want to say? Any shout-outs?
Shout out to the people inside that are risking a lot to, you know, to push back against the system. And shout out to family members that are connecting us, and shout out to the folks doing the work.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks a lot, y'all. Okay, that was two people from the African People's Caucus of the Industrial Workers of the World in IWOC, and somebody from IWOC, formerly incarcerated, that is out of Oklahoma. It's really great to sit down with these people and just get a feel for where everybody's at. Had a really good time. Really great experience talking with everybody. Really enjoyed it. Really interesting question again of basically how do we take a situation like this and bring lots of people into the organizing work. And it's a real big question, and it's, you know, whether people are insurrectionaries, whether they're IWW, whether they're working in coalitions, it's all something we got to think about. And next up, we're going to have an interview with somebody from Portland Anarchist Black Cross, which is really great, so please stick around for that. Okay, so we have one more new participant. This is somebody from Portland Anarchist Black Cross, or ABC. What's been going on in the Pacific Northwest generally with September 9th? What drove you out here to the Bay Area for this conference? Why is it important for you to be here? And what's going down in your area on September 9th?
Well, so for the Portland Anarchist Black Cross, we've been working on September 9th campaign from the beginnings since last year when the original call out was crafted and coming together with the North American Anarchist Black Cross conference to begin the foundations of setting up a nationwide network to move on this issue in tandem with ABC chapters and IWOC chapters across the country, setting up an outside support network to answer the calls to for outside support that the Free Alabama movement was making, was saying that was necessary to move forward with this national call to action. So, in Portland, what we've been doing over the last year is a lot of regional work. We've got an ABC chapter forming up in Eugene. We've been working with folks in Seattle and Olympia to start trying to work together more closely on that level. And in Portland, we've formed up a September 9th coalition that we're hoping will move forward. We're working with folks from Black Lives Matter, from the All African People's Revolutionary Party. We're working with people from some prison, immigrant detention center divestment, private prison divestment campaigns. So this is the kind of work that we've been doing. We've been working with guys on the inside in Oregon who formed ABC Oregon Inside Chapter. So we have that move in. We've got Inside newsletter that prisoners write and edit across the state. So we've been working on that project, and we do a zine distro. We got all these different things kind of moving right now.
That's awesome. Talk more about the Inside Anarchist Black Cross chapter, and how is that organized? How did that come about?
Right. So one of the public ABC affiliates from that is a guy named Joshua Cartrede, who's incarcerated in Oregon right now. He's at Deer Ridge Correctional Institution, and you find out more about him on pdxabc.org. And he's been incarcerated for about 4 years in his current sentence, and he's been doing a lot of work trying to pull youth out of the white supremacist movement on the inside, because in Oregon we have some very active white supremacist street gangs that do a lot of recruitment out of the prison system. For instance, European Kindred has over 300 members in Gresham, which is a suburb right outside of Portland, and actually they just had a member murder a person of color in the Gresham area. So this is where these guys are recruiting, and we're really trying to fertilize those efforts to undercut what they're doing on the inside. And a lot of that just happens to go through educational work, and so that's a lot of the work with the guys on the inside, starting study groups and trying to mess with these, you know, bullshit ideas that some of these guys are cooking on. So,
and this is the guy that goes by Zero?
Yeah, Zero.
Can you talk a little bit about just how his approach is to, because he's a white guy,
yeah,
but how basically bringing young people out of white supremacist gangs inside towards anarchist politics?
So his whole history was, you know, he actually, as a youth, was an active member in the white supremacist movement.
Oh, shit.
All the way up through his first stint on the inside. And after he came out, after serving some time, he actually, you know, fell in love with a person of color and started really realizing how bullshit his ideas were. And yeah, so a little bit of American History X kind of story on that. But he, so he disavowed his white supremacist ties, and then he became, you know, a target by the white supremacist movement, who has targeted him while he was on the outside and then through his latest incarceration stint. So. So that's the kind of approach that he's relating to the youth on in there, because he understands the mentality that brings these, you know, uneducated, you know, youth into this type of mindset, who are really just kind of looking for, you know, some kind of group or some kind of group membership or support network that they don't have. And so, but what he does is he tries to relate with them on where they're at, to just start probing, you know, these kind of assumptions or these ideas, you know. So
what do you feel that people like Zero would say as far as what kind of resources they would need from people to kind of engage in that kind of organizing from the outside?
So what they really need is just a lot more just general support. They need people, you know, just writing letters. You know, that's one thing he talks about a lot, is he just wants more people just writing to him on a friendship level, you know, people like that. And that's, you know, kind of a basic thing, but that's something that they would like to see. They need people that can do tangible things for the people on the inside as well, sending in books, sending in reading materials, and you know, just being there for people on the inside, being able to take a phone call, you know, and seeing what's up, and, you know, checking in with them, what do you need, like what's the situation. So they're really focused on just building this groundwork and building these study groups and trying to expand that throughout, you know, Oregon. And yeah, so they're gonna need, so they need resources with that, and people that can you know, help out, I guess, you know, keeping people in touch and that kind of stuff. So
let's talk about, there was an article that Zero recently wrote critiquing Maoist International Movement, which produces a paper, and they've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
But what was kind of his perspective on the differences between the anarchist approach and what MIM was talking about?
Well, he really feels like MIM is like shoving stuff down people's throat, and they have a lot of ideology, but they don't offer a lot of real tangible support. And that's what he's really found, like with our work as an anarchist Black Cross, is that we are really there to be able to offer tangible stuff, like, hey, we're going to help you compile this newsletter that you want to write. Like, hey, we're going to help start an inside-outside study group. You know, we can send you materials. Like, if there's a big situation, like, hey, we can drop some money on your commissary, you know, like, we're actually there, we're real, we're not just trying to shove down some ideology like the Maoist International Movement does. And they do have some influence, and there's people on the inside that have been politicized by these people that identify as Maoist, but will work together with people like Zero, you know. And Zero was, well, actually heavily influenced by MIM and their publication for a long time, and has, you know, over the years turned to more of an anarchist perspective.
Yeah, that's really interesting, though, just his political evolution. And well, when we do this podcast, we'll put a link to people and how they could write to him. But can you talk a little bit about like the coalition building that you all have done and what that's been like?
Yeah, so it started off a few months ago when we kicked off and had some of our first coalition meetings. And we just over the years have built pretty good ties with some people from the All African People's Revolutionary Party and some people from Black Lives Matter in Portland, just doing several, you know, one-off like events and just coordinating together to make these smaller events happen to the point where we built the relationships where we could really work together on something like this. And so we brought these people to the table. We brought, you know, the IWW folks to the table, the IWOC, you know, people that are intersecting with that kind of work, and just began, you know, having this discussion about how to move forward with September 9th, because everyone, I think, saw the intersections with their work. So we even have like some people from like a local Greenpeace group that got involved and were like interested in doing like artwork and this realm of things. So they've plugged into this coalition, and you know, now they're learning about all the, you know, prison issues and and this and that. So we just try to have an approach where we really focus on where our affinities at, like where our common enemies and issues that we want to work towards, and keep it in that framework of how we relate without, you know, watering down our politics or their politics. So
yeah, thanks for sharing that. You recently went on a speaking tour in Europe. Do you want to just talk about that and just like either what other anarchist perception was of the U.S. or just what people thought about, you mentioned Ferguson before, or the September 9th, just kind of what was on people's minds when you went over there to talk about this stuff?
Yeah, so, you know, we were able to make some pretty good connections with some folks in Germany that are actually working on developing a prisoner union over there for the past couple years. And before I even got over there, I'd messaged some people about September 9th a few months prior and found out, like, they even already had, like, a bunch of really nice pamphlets in German about September 9th. And then from there, we met with a couple other groups, but made some really good connections in Greece on this issue, who translated the call into Greek and, you know, committed to spreading this stuff around in their prison system. So, you know, over there, there's a sense of just like, what the hell is going on in the United States? Like, what is going on with Donald Trump? Like, stuff is crazy. You guys have like cops killing people like constantly, you know, like they were kind of baffled with some of the interviews I did where I'm like, yeah, Ferguson got cracked down by the National Guard, you know, they got called in. And so people are curious, like, how is the momentum continuing from Ferguson, and kind of had this, because over there I think they have a lot more broader social movements that, and I think in the United States we have like smaller groupings of all these different groups that kind of do their own thing and sometimes come together or something. And so their conceptualization of how like movements work is a little bit different than in the United States, or how these things function. And you know, my thing was like, well, you know, the United States is an increasingly polarized society that's, you know, being put to this moment of, you know, really questioning the roots of the white supremacist, genocidal, like settler colonial state, with a lot of people like Black Lives Matter doing this work, calling out police violence. And so those things are getting called out while we're also like in this identity crisis of like, you know, the role of like the white male and patriarchal, you know, positions in society, and, you know, with the middle class no longer being a reality for people. It's a moment where I think all those things are built into what the identity is of the nation state of the United States, you know. And like, so just kind of talking about those things and like how, you know, it's a very unpredictable kind of chaotic situation in many ways in the political terrain that, you know, over there people are just kind of baffled. You know, they're also like baffled by the fact that like what are you doing? Like, your police are killing people constantly. Like, what are you doing? Like, why aren't you just tearing shit up? You know, like, and that's how in, you know, like in Greece, that's kind of their perspective there. Of course, I mean, it's Greece, come on. So I mean, but you know, it's obviously a very, very different context that we live in here, and we have different reality of a state that just, you know, in a society and a culture that just functions so differently. But they were very, very excited to hear about this work, about September 9th, about our abilities to work in coalition and with other organizations or groups that don't, you know, think exactly like us. And that was an interesting thing with the Greeks, because they got the black bloc anarchist versus the red anarchist versus the communists, and they all hate each other and fight all the time. And so when I gave my presentation about September 9th, they were like very surprised to hear again about like these different groups we were able to work with, and actually had some of the people that were kind of more of the black bloc tendency come up to me and be like, you know, we're gonna share this with our with our communist friends and work together with them on this. So, right.
Well, that's interesting. What would you say the main differences are between what the anarchists in the European countries are doing as far as like prisoner support and like organizing inside? Because definitely in Greece the anarchists inside the prison actually have a degree of influence.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have, you know, they have like a dozen contemporary kind of political prisoners from several guys from the conspiracy Cells of Fire. They have some like revolutionary anarchist organizations that are, I can't remember the name explicitly, but they're not of the conspiracy Cells of Fire tendency that are also locked up over there. But from my conversations with people over there, they kind of said, like, it's interesting. They were talking about how, like, the total nihilist conspiracy Cells of Fire guys would work with, like, the communist guys on the inside, because they had, like, mutual respect for one another, and they would do, like, hunger strikes and this type of thing, you know, for given their conditions, which I think nihilism over there is a totally different current. But anyways, like, over there, it seemed like, from what I was talking with people, there's less of a... They still have this very, like, okay, political prisoners are these political prisoners, and the social prisoners are kind of this different current, and they have a lot of fascists involved and, you know, in the prison system. And so still, like, a lot of those types of things and ideas aren't... There's... That wasn't really like a divide that people had thought about, like prisons as a terrain for organizing. And part of that might just be that, you know, they don't have, you know, one out of 100 people in their society like in prison, you know what I'm saying? So
that's what we have, right?
Yeah
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we got, you know, over 2 million people incarcerated at any given time. So, you know, so that's a factor. But it was coming out of the conversation about what we're doing here, is definitely they seem like, okay, like we're interested in looking at that and seeing what our comrades on the inside would be, you know, down to spread this or not. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, just going back to tie all this in together, what we asked some of the other people was that, what do you want to see come after the 9th, like after everything is not said and done, but what do you want to really happen?
Well, I hope that, you know, out of this work, we've built a national prison abolitionist movement in some way, and put this issue really on the agenda or the radar of most people, and building, you know, capacity for, you know, I think that anarchists need to really start getting a little bit more organized and start putting stuff together. And I think that in general, when we see people standing up, like in the prisons in a big way, like I'm really hoping that inspires people on the outside to start taking a stand to take out this system and start working together to figure out how we can move in bigger and badder ways. After September 9th, you know, I think it's going to be a long-haul struggle, but I'm hoping that we get a little bit of a, you know, unruliness to the way that we, within the prison system, that can be fomented, and people can start working together in a big way to really start thinking about how are we going to get rid of these, you know, the prison system as a tangible reality. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I know as a Portland ABC, we're trying to just get more organized, trying to get back into the grassroots and build an organization that can tackle, you know, some prison abolition aspects, and then also tackle, you know, urban issues with gentrification and urban renewal, and because we've done campaigns in that regard in the past as well, and start connecting all of these things together, the police violence, what's going on with our cities, and start moving in a way that can have a more cohesive approach and vision for what we want in the future, and not just cordoning our work off into these specific kind of activist pigeonholes, you know. So
cool. Anything else you want to say? Any shout outs? Or
I just want to give a shout out to Sean Swain. Vote for Sean Swain 2016. Write to Joshua Cartwright, you know, write to prisoners. Rights of the Political Prisoners, don't be forgetting about them. So,
yeah.
Cool. Thanks a lot for joining us, and have a good rest of the convention here.
Thanks.